We are Rogue Media Sports.
Reese's Peanut Butter Cups are the greatest, but let me play devil's advocate here. Let's see. So, no, that's a good thing. that's definitely not a problem. Reese's, you did it. You stumped this charming devil.
Look around. You can find cars like these on AutoTrader, like that car riding right your tail. Or if you're tailgating right now, all those cars doubling as kitchens and living rooms are on AutoTrader too. Are you working out and listening to this ad at the same time? Well, multitasking pro, cars like the ones in the gym parking lot are for sale on AutoTrader. New cars, used cars, electric cars, maybe even flying cars. Okay, no flying cars, but as soon as they get invented, they'll be on AutoTrader. Just you wait. AutoTrader.
What'd you feel like the key to your success tonight was? You had the three takeaways, didn't allow a touchdown on defense.
Hit a mother in the face over and over and over and over again until they quit. And when they quit, hit them again and again and again and again.
Well, that was DeMarcus Lawrence with Ed. And just moments after this game, Ed Werder, Matt Mosley, it is the Doomsday Podcast. And Ed, that was a very expressive DeMarcus Lawrence that you were visiting with after this game. We are taping this live from a luxury suite at AT&T Stadium, high above the field where the Cowboys just a couple of hours ago took down the Eagles 33-13. And Ed, for a fan base, and honestly, a lot of other people across the country have demanded that the Cowboys, you know, beat somebody of note, I think this counts.
Yeah, I mean, I think the Cowboys, if you look at the scoreboard, did, again, what they've done so often this season. They scored 30 or more points, and they won by at least 20. But this does seem different because they defeated, unquestionably, a quality opponent, a first-place team with the most victories in the NFL when the day started. That's the Philadelphia Eagles, and the Dallas defense was so dominant that the only touchdown the Eagles scored was the fault of Dak Prescott. They created three takeaways, all on fumble recoveries, and listen to this, ended an astounding streak by Philadelphia. The Eagles had scored at least one offensive touchdown in 94 consecutive regular season games until tonight. That streak comes to an end. And so that's kind of maybe explains why DeMarcus Lawrence was so simple, eloquent, and brutally descriptive of their tactics in this game.
Mm-hmm.
And the funny thing is when I walked up to him, he really didn't seem like he wanted to talk. And then I said to him, look, I'm doing something on defense coming out of this game on TV. And I just need to ask you a couple things because you broke this streak. And he wasn't aware of it. So I explained it to him. And then the next thing I knew, he was answering three or four questions. And if he would have just answered the first one like he answered the last one, we could have been done so much sooner. That was all I wanted.
Yeah, Ed got in there, got some good stuff from DeMarcus. I spent a lot of time with Jerry.
I'm sorry.
And at some point, no, it was interesting, as always. And there was an El Cid reference that was made. Remember the end of El Cid and the famous part where El Cid rides out. He's been mortally wounded, and they strap him into his horse, and his guys ride
McCarthy
out there with him. Well, yeah, and that was the joke. Jerry was saying that was McCarthy tonight.
After his appendectomy
his appendectomy, it was like El Cid. El Cid could have survived, but El Cid said he wasn't going to be able to ride in time. And he left the arrow in him, and they sent him out to battle, and it inspired his troops, inspired his soldiers. And Jerry said that Mike McCarthy was El Cid tonight. He did look good. I mean, he looked fine. During the game, he ran down there and challenged something. He was very energetic, called a good game. Like, to me, he didn't look worse for the wear.
And
he was on the table on Wednesday. We almost lost him.
And
I mean,
after the press conferences are all finished, which involves him and then Dak Prescott, when Prescott was finished about 5 minutes later, I was still sitting in the interview room and McCarthy walks through as he always does. And, you know, he acknowledged me and I said, hey, Mike, a tough week for you. Congratulations. And I said, just for social media, I want to see your scar. I want to ask him to photograph his scar so I could put it on Twitter, thinking that might get me some hits. What do you think?
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah. I was just kidding, of course.
Yeah. Did he laugh? I'd
like to think he barely laughed.
he it hurts him to laugh right now.
Probably. That's right? Probably the reason.
He probably would have
been a good belly laugh if not for that.
Yeah. Yeah. His belly hurts right now. And we didn't, by the way, I'm kidding. We didn't almost lose him. He was fine. And he came through it with flying colors. Stephen Simcox, our fearless producer, please play the music. All right, Cowboys win this thing. And, Ed, there's only been one close game at home, right? Was it that Seattle game? Everything right. else has been a blowout. This was a blowout. And, I mean, let's start. We got to give the dude to the place kicker. I mean, this is unbelievable. And he's become a huge weapon. And it struck me tonight. It was kind of comical almost. When a ball spotted – when the holder's putting the ball down at midfield.
On the logo.
Yeah, you're just kind of like, God, that looks long, right? It's just like, that looks crazy long. And he makes a 60, 59, a 50, and a 45. I mean, again, this kid was in the USFL. He played soccer at Notre Dame. I mean, it's just remarkable. And he's obliterated any record. I mean, I think there was a Cleveland kicker that had the record at made his first 18 kicks, you know, in the NFL. This guy, as a rookie, has now made his first 30 field goals. I mean, it's remarkable. We've never seen anything like it.
I was watching him pregame when I was on the field, and he has just easy power. I mean, it's like a guy who hits driver distance and does it with a 2-iron. Just incredible power. Without really seeming to put a lot of effort into it. And he made the 60-yarder, like you said, off the star logo, you know, to convert the Donovan Wilson fumble into points for a 10-0 lead. That's his sixth kick from 50 or more yards. That tied Brett Maher for the Cowboys' rookie record. But then he made another from 50. And he's, what, the fifth kicker to make a 60-plus yard kick in Cowboys history, and Maher has all the rest. It's him and Maher, the only ones in franchise history to make a 60-plus yard field goal. It's just amazing. And, I mean, you can see McCarthy, they can score from as soon as they cross midfield. They're effectively ready to score. They're guaranteed three
if
they get to midfield. It's crazy, and it's a weapon you see McCarthy use very effectively. I mean, most coaches don't like to take field goals, but when you can get them from as far out as the Cowboys can score, there's very few teams capable of that. I mean, you're looking at like the Ravens with Justin Tucker and who else can consistently kick from that kind of distance?
Yeah. I mean, anybody in Denver.
Brandon McManus used to be that guy.
Uh-huh. I have to say the 60-yarder was at a time when I kind of thought, golly, I still can't quite trust. I mean, you got to trust him because he's unbelievable, but you also have to be logical. And in my mind, I'm like, you're handing the Eagles a short field.
Yeah.
You're not up. Nobody you're until only Aubrey's, up 7-0, right?
That's why nobody until Aubrey's done it in the history of the game in the first quarter, because nobody wants to take the risk that you're going to give your opponent half the field to go score a touchdown on you when he misses or if he misses. But McCarthy wasn't afraid of that. He had enough confidence in this guy that in the first quarter with a 7-0 lead, he let him go kick and make it 10-0. And as it turned out, I think the note here is Aubrey's the first player in NFL history to make two field goals of 59 yards or longer in the same game.
Wow.
A guy who was on the street.
Yeah.
Like everybody going into the season, one of the big question marks on this team was the place kicker.
Yeah. And I asked Jerry about it, like what it's like to have that kind of a weapon. And Jerry said something kind of funny. He was like, he's like, it's crazy. He's like, a year ago, we couldn't make an extra point.
Now we're making 60-yard field goals.
Yeah, now he's making. Have you talked to Aubrey?
A little bit now and then. Not, I don't speak to him all that often.
I used to kind of have friendships with kickers and punters.
You should get on there.
Well, I would like to, but I'm just saying I didn't know if you'd kind of laid the foundation for us. Okay.
No, not one of my guys.
For some reason, like specialists, I've always, whether it be LP Lattisour, I went to Matt McBriar's wedding. He invited me to Hawaii for his wedding.
Wow. You went to Hawaii for his wedding?
We kind of made a trip of it. But I mean, I did attend his wedding over there.
Okay.
And all the Australians were there, like Darren Bennett, all those people. Darren Bennett was the father of the. We're fine. My gosh, this is why people listen to the Doomsday podcast. Okay, let's continue here, though. I mean, so the kicking was unreal. I mean, the defense was a huge story. I know that's, you're going to have a piece on ESPN about that. We were just talking about DeMarcus Lawrence. Parsons was sick. We found out the note before the game.
Very odd.
Earlier in the day.
Very odd to get a game day up eight that Micah Parsons is on the injury report with an illness. They did it obviously only to comply with NFL rules and regulations regarding injured players. But I was doing TV at the time here, and I immediately, you know, started texting people I know, and I was told he's definitely going to play. At this point, we don't think it's going to affect his snap count. But after the game, it was pretty clear it did affect his snap count and it did affect his productivity. But he did, in a key moment in the game, bull rush Lane Johnson.
Yeah.
And just use strictly power to push him into Jalen Hurts and get a sack, which is historic in that he now has at least 12 sacks in each of his first three NFL seasons. Only one other player has accomplished that, and that's the Hall of Famer, Reggie White. When you and Reggie White are the only two guys on a sack list, that is quite an accomplishment.
Yeah.
But yeah, he was talking about, he said, I took as many IVs and as much medication to be able to play, you know, as possible. He said all he wanted to do now was go home and rest, but said there was never really any question in his mind that he would play. He knows they depend on him. You know, Dak was asked after the game, you know, how much he encouraged Micah throughout the course of the game, both of them being kind of these believers in Michael Jordan and, you know, Kobe Bryant, these guys who have played through illnesses and injuries and performed at an astoundingly high level. And Dak, I think more as a basically said, yeah, there were a couple times during the game I'd walk by him and I'd say something, you know, this is, we need you. This is why you're out here. This is why you're great. This is where you get a chance to prove you're great. I really got the sense that he was like, hey, let's not make too much of this.
Uh-huh.
Like a lot of guys, you know, play with severe, serious injuries. He wasn't doing that. He was just sick.
Do you think Jerry is upset with him for not maybe getting the flu vaccine?
Like he was Amari Cooper?
Yeah.
I don't think Micah Parsons is going to find himself in Cleveland for his decision not to get the RSV vaccine. Assuming he didn't. We don't know that he didn't. He has a young kid. So,
yeah.
So who knows? We don't know that. But yeah, a different performance from Micah Parsons in that he did play sick, and he did say, you know, he didn't play as many first downs as he normally would, and he did say that there were sometimes even tapped out because he didn't feel great.
There were moments in the game where the Eagles looked like they were maybe either going to climb back in it. They had a little momentum. They did move the ball at times, and yet the Cowboys, three strips. And it wasn't like, oh, lucky kind of stuff. I mean, it was very punch out, rip it out. Gilmore, Marquise Bell, and Donovan Wilson. I believe Wilson had the first one. And, boy, that set the tone. And you could tell right away, and again, people have kind of speculated on how banged up Jalen Hurts. But he was – everybody else was kind of like, is it down? Is he down? And he just had that look on like, no, I know I fumbled. Like they in it. But, you know, those were extremely important because they were seemed like all three fumbles, they were kind of moving the ball and about to do something. And that turned everything back the other direction. And then really the Eagles never threatened. The only time you ever thought they were really in the game was when they made it 24-13 and they had a little momentum after the strip sack fumble return.
That's it.
But I mean, great performance by the Cowboys in terms of, and I think you hit on it earlier. It does seem like Mike McCarthy made a real point of that to emphasis. Hey, we've got to get the ball out.
Right.
And I think against Philly, they did get the ball out a few times, but didn't recover the fumble.
Three times, I believe there were three fumbles by the Philly offense up in week 9 in Philadelphia, and they recovered all their own fumbles. And tonight was a completely different story. And this is one of the trademarks of the Dan Quinn defense. They lead the NFL in creating fumbles the last 2 years. They lead the NFL in defensive touchdowns. So this is kind of what they do on defense. It was kind of a weird game to me in that the offense has been so good for so many consecutive weeks. And Dak Prescott, what, extended his streak for games with multiple touchdowns to 7, the best of his career, tied Tony Romo for second in franchise history behind Don Meredith. But I don't know. Dak just didn't seem on his game tonight. He seemed a little tentative, a little inaccurate in ways that, you know, we don't normally see him. And on the strip sack fumble, he said he had a touchdown and he was carrying the ball too low because he was getting ready to fire it down the field for what he thought was a sure touchdown that McCarthy had called a great play. But this was just a different – I thought it was a different game, winning it with defense and relying more on the running game than they did. Just seemed a little different to me. And
although the Cooks, one of those throws – We're not putting this out. One of those throws was like just gorgeous. It was a 30-yard. Yeah, right. I just thought he ripped that ball.
And they just
there.
Went at him then, right? They didn't. Yeah. There was no let up on the Cowboys on offense. They continued to believe they could exploit what's been a bad Philly defense. I think the last 3 weeks they've given up an average of like 36 points a game. Yeah. I thought one of the interesting things coming into this game that I mentioned on TV today was the Eagles defense since week 8 had played the most snaps in the NFL because they're so bad on third down. They can't get off the field. And we saw that tonight. They couldn't get off the field early in the game. The Cowboys, I think, converted their first four third downs and their first fourth down. And so they couldn't get off the field. And the Cowboys, by comparison, over the course of the entire season have played the second fewest snaps on defense in the NFL. So they're rested. They're capable of playing a four-quarter defensive game, whereas the Eagles are not. And I think that's why McCarthy went at him and Dak went at him early in the game, attacked the defense. And they weren't as successful as they would normally be. And let's give them a little credit because they did have some adversity during the week. I mean, it can't be easy getting ready to play a game of this consequence with your head coach missing both of the two big practices during the week because he's, you know, in surgery. They're very fortunate that they had great player leadership from Dak Prescott and DeMarcus Lawrence on the defensive side of the ball and others. And, you know, they have veteran coordinators that they depended upon to run practice. And, you know, Dak said on Thursday, a padded practice was probably the best one they've had all year. But when McCarthy wasn't there, because the players like wanted to do it for him. Like when he looked at all the GPS numbers of how hard everybody worked, they wanted him to see that they worked as hard or harder than if he had been there to see it himself. They wanted to sort of alleviate the stress that they knew he would feel if they weren't working as hard in his absence as he would have wanted them to.
Yeah, you were out there more than McCarthy this week. You know, he missed because of COVID, and Dan Quinn got that win, right, filling in for him. So,
but that was different because he wasn't the play caller then. You know, Kellen Moore was the play caller. So, I mean, McCarthy's never been more important to the Cowboys than he is right now because he's the offensive play caller and Dak relies on him.
Yeah.
And one of the things Dak said during the week was, the only thing I think we're missing is as we go through plays in practice, he's not right there for he and I to have an interaction about what he saw me do or what I thought. Or we don't have that exchange after, you know, occasional plays. They got on the phone and did their big Thursday meeting where, you know, they add things or take things out of the playbook. It's him and Schottenheimer and McCarthy. They did it virtually, which they learned from COVID. In fact, that was one of the funny things that Lawrence said before tonight's comment. He said, shout out to COVID on Thursday, because it kind of taught them to build in all these contingencies.
Yeah. I mean, I don't feel led to say like shout out to COVID. It seems like an odd thing.
It was funny. It
seems like an odd deal, I liked it.
Lawrence has had a great, Tank's had a great week.
Great week of quotes. Lots of expletives, lots of shout outs to COVID.
You know who else deserves a shout out is Stephon Gilmore. I thought
he's great.
I mean, if you look at why is this team better equipped to win in the postseason? We talked about Brandon Aubrey. You mentioned Brandon Cooks with the big play right before the half to set up a touchdown. And Stephon Gilmore. None of those three guys were on the roster last year. And Gilmore, basically, once DK Metcalf took advantage of Deron Bland last week, they put Gilmore on him to slow him down. And tonight, he traveled with A.J. Brown. A.J. Brown, I think, 9 catches for 94 yards, no touchdowns. And I thought Gilmore did a great job on him, on frustrating him, on not allowing him the big play, denying him some third downs. And so Gilmore said after the game that early on he was motivated because Brown said something to him insulting his age. He said, oh, you're old or something like that. And Gilmore's a former NFL Defensive Player of the Year. Yeah, he's 33. But I think he took that as a challenge and said, I just wanted to be around him all night long and say, hey, I'm here. And he said, I think I did that. So credit to him.
That is that was good. I'm glad AJ said that. Now, Ed, I did want to say to Marable Holmes a huge thank you. And Ed is one of the reasons, is a great partner, one of the ways we're able to pay your large salary here at Doomsday Podcast. Check your bank account, by the way. There's something new in there. But they had the Marable Homes had its, they were part of this tour of homes. I've told you about it. And it happened last week, and it was just like incredible. Like people came away. They got to see the home. I think they had something like 1,600 people came through their home.
Through Blake tickets. And his wife's home?
Yeah, Blake and Amy's home.
I've seen a picture of their home. I'd like to get inside.
Yeah, love to get you in there. Yeah. The pool is great as well. Love to get in there myself. Just unbelievable. Timeless, classic homes, approachable luxury homes, and ones that kind of fit the neighborhood. They're not so ostentatious that they just kind of like, whoa, what happened there? They blend in to a neighborhood that's been there throughout the 60s and 70s. That's where the old Cowboys players live. Bob Lilly, Dan Reeves, all those guys, Renfro, they all lived over there in Lake Highlands. And that's where these houses are going up. Also, Preston Hollow, Park Cities, Lakewood, Forest Hills, Little Forest Hills, we call it, Richardson, and Cedar Creek Lake. Old Tony had a place, by the way. Tony Romo out at Cedar Creek Lake for a while. I don't know if he still has it, but they're building some gorgeous homes out on the lake, and Blake is doing those. Like, Tony, if Tony wanted to build another home out there, that's who he would call now. Hey, Blake, what's up, man? I got some disposable income.
Didn't you go to Romo's wedding too?
Yes.
Yeah, you went to McBriar and Romo's
wedding. I go to a lot of Cowboys weddings. But then I ruined it by talking about the weddings on the radio. That did not help my cause. And I was there with him when he was dating Carrie Underwood at his birthday party, whatever that birthday was, like 28th birthday party. So anyway, Ed, and I remember a certain reporter I had to kind of let under the rope there. If that came under.
Who was that?
Oh, just an old buddy of ours, ESPN reporter. Okay, as we continue on. Now, Ed, we got a lot because you've got some notes to get to. But before we do that, let's do what we call stretch plays. The harshest grader in America. But, man, I don't know, Eddie, there's not a whole lot you could complain about punt coverage because that's.
Was that bad?
Well,
because of the fake.
They pulled off
the fake when they should have been alert to it. Yeah.
Braden Mann.
That was Jalen Tolbert's fault.
Is that what they said?
That's what I saw him. I was watching him at the time. Yeah.
Got through a great pass.
Yeah.
That was the best pass of the night for the Eagles. And he's an Aggie, by the way, from Houston, Texas. All right. It is time for Glenn Stretch Smith Stretch Plays. All right. It is time for Stretch Plays. Glenn Stretch Smith, former Cowboys scout and coach. You see him on WFAA Channel 8 as we tape in the aftermath of the Cowboys' 33-13 beating of the Eagles. There's only been one close game at home, and it was against the Seahawks. Cowboys continue to roll, and they've now won 15 straight games at home. Stretch, tonight, let's start on the defense. People always love, hey, what's Stretch going to give? What kind of grades? But let's start with the overall picture of that defense. I mean, three strips, three huge takeaways, and to hold a high-powered team that returns pretty much everyone from last year's Super Bowl trip, a team that came in with only two losses, but to hold them to 6 points, and obviously they got the touchdown on the fumble return for the strip sack and the fumble return, but pretty amazing performance from the defense.
Well, and what you got to like is, to me, it's how they tackled. It's how they went after the football. It's the physicality side of how they played the game. I do believe that Hurts is nicked. I mean, you saw him. He does not look like the guy he does or he did when they played him in Philadelphia. All that being said, what I saw tonight from the secondary was about as good as I've seen a Dallas secondary play in a long time. I mean, to watch Stephon Gilmore just get after Brown was something that it was really refreshing to watch him match the intensity of him. And when I'm saying that, I'm saying I think that Dan Quinn saw that Hurts was nicked up. He kept bringing the blitz, and they kept trying to run those shallow crossers. And every time it was like Dallas's defense was playing with the correct leverage, attacking the football, going and making tackles, getting guys on the ground. And when you can do that and you can just shut down a Philadelphia offense who, you know, a lot of people have argued is as good as there is out there in the game. When you look at their offensive line, Dallas Goedert coming back, their receiving core. I mean, Dallas stoned their ass. And I'm telling you, they were after them tonight. They played more physical. They were, I mean, it was really refreshing. Even, you know, now Hankins went down. I think that hurts them a little bit. But when you think about it, they still roll in Gallimore. They still roll in Mozzie. They've got guys who can get into the football game, still get after the quarterback. Michael got the one sack. But we know he, you know, come down with the flu and was not feeling good. You saw him just before the game, and he's sucking on the oxygen, and he had to fight through it. But you saw DeMarcus coming off the edge. I mean, I'm telling you, this was a defense that after they looked tired like they did when they played against Seattle, they came out with a purpose, and the purpose was to get after Philadelphia, strip the ball, and go play a physical brand of defense. A all the way around for the defense, Mosley.
Wow. And then in particular, Stretch, Marquise Bell had one of those forced fumbles. Gilmore, as you mentioned, and then Wilson had one early. And to me, Stretch, that really set the tone. And Stretch, you've coached for a long time, and you know how these defenders are supposed to do it. But that, I mean, that is kind of, I mean, how demoralizing is that for a team like the Eagles when they're moving the ball, getting the ball down in Cowboys territory, and then, like, Jalen got stripped one time. AJ, you were just talking about Devontae late. I mean, every time they had a chance to get back in the game or try to get something going, the Cowboys did it. And, boy, it wasn't a lucky thing, was it? It looked like a very intentional type deal that they were going in there with those strips.
Yeah, and they were that's how they were playing. I mean, they were playing with a very aggressive tone. They were going and again, stripping at the football. I think Mike McCarthy made a comment at the podium post game where he said it's something they had practiced on because he felt like kind of there through the middle of the season, you know, they were not getting those strips and they were not getting that. They were after the football. And again, to me, it was a physical brand of football that I haven't seen in a while. Mosley, if you're looking at your teeth there in the camera, yeah, you could use a little of that whitening gel. Get your ass into the dentist and get some of it so you can put it in those trays.
Rembrandt. Love a good Rembrandt. And I like the Sensodyne. That is how I keep them looking as wide as you see them right now. And stretch it is. Stretch plays as we continue. Let's look over there on the offensive side of the ball. And let's start, as we do often, with the quarterback. Dak, 24-39, 271 yards. And by the way, let's talk about the kicker at some point. Wow. Wow.
I was going to get – I mean, I quite
– Unbelievable. Really,
I thought that's where you were going to go was to the kicker, because and I've got that on my notes here. I mean, yeah. It really is unbelievable that he kicked it from 60 and from 59 to keep that streak going. And I think that could have been good from – 65, 68. I mean, it was, he hammered that. And he, I mean, it was flushed right down the middle. I mean, you know, to see that young man, you know, he's from the Metroplex, obviously played soccer at Notre Dame, but I mean, he's an NFL, you know, he was in the USFL with the Birmingham Stallions. And I think he's going to make the Pro Bowl. And I think that's, if you think about it, I mean, two back-to-back players come out of the USFL and are going to have made the Pro Bowl. For the Dallas Cowboys, last year, Kevontae Turpin, and this year, Aubrey, the kicker. But it is, I mean, he is hitting it as good as you can hit it, and it's a routine. I mean, you see him come out there and kind of pull his breastplate down on his shoulder pads so he can get that air in there. And hey, you got to give him all the credit in the world, that young man, for making the transition to Dak. You know, we're talking about, and then to make the transition to Dak, I think that you know, he's got to become a topic in the MVP conversation. Now, I saw him do a couple things tonight that I don't know that I really thought I could ever see him do. And it was kind of right there before the half, and Blankenship had gone down. Their safety from Philadelphia, and they rotated the safeties down to shut the middle of the field. And he throws Cooks the bang eight, and it's as perfect of read and of look that you can get. It's a great ball. I'm telling you, I questioned whether the quarterback could play at this level, and I've given him plenty of, you know, I've given him plenty of criticism. And I'm also from the school that when you do coach, you got to put your hand around him, and you got to love on him. And right now, Dak's doing a great job. I mean, he is throwing the ball around. He's distributing the football. He's in control of this offense. And I thought I thought he really played well. You know, offensive line, I thought played well. Now, they had a couple penalties against a really good Philadelphia front. But I thought, you know, I thought you saw Tyron just absolutely shut down the left side over there. Steele got beat one time. Beatis got whipped one time and had to hold. But, I mean, that's going to happen when you're playing a really good defense. I thought both backs ran the football well. I mean, and I'm going to tell you something. I am super impressed with Jake Ferguson. And I'm going to mention this because I really believe it needs to be mentioned is, you know, they allowed Dalton Schultz to go to the Houston Texans via free agency. And when you look and you see the speed that Jake Ferguson's got to get in those seams, to threaten that middle, and, you know, it's like almost feels like once a game, he gets one of those corners that tries to go low at him, and he's athletic enough to hurdle over that guy. I mean, he is a heck of a football player, and he's done a heck of a job of replacing, you know, what really was Dax kind of, you know, go-to guy when they'd run those options with Dalton Schultz. So great job with Jake Ferguson. I still like what Gallup did today on that deep ball. I mean, he's got great body control. He can get his feet down. We know CD. We understand Cooks, but It's good when teams go to shut those guys down. And now back to the quarterback, he's seeing, you know, he's reading coverages and not just going to a guy and throwing that ball to Gallup and doing those kind of things. To me, shows an offense that it's hitting on all cylinders. They ran the football well tonight. I mean, they had 6.5 yards a run, and I'm taking out the hand sweeps and the reverses and some of Dak's runs. I mean, it was good to see Dowdle and Pollard hit it downhill and get inside for those tough 5 and 6 yard runs. So, you know, I'm telling you, a complete, what I felt like is a complimentary football game. I mean, a great job by the kicker, great job by the offense. You know, other than, I'd give an A around, other than Dak, you can't fumble the football in that critical situation. Almost let the Eagles, it did let the Eagles get back in that football game in a game that you completely dominated. And then, you know, hey, we got to give credit to that head coach. I mean, he got up after having, after having an appendectomy and got out there and called a hell of a game. So, I mean, golly, a complete Cowboy game. And I'm going to finish by saying this, Matt. I thought that, Dallas really needed this football game, and this quarterback needed a signature win. Am I going to stamp this a signature win? No. But I am going to say that he led his football team to a win that they needed to go get, and they did go get it in a dominating way. And so I can only say that, it was a very, kind of alpha to omega all the way around experience for what I felt like was a heck of a football game. And you got to give the entire team a lot of credit.
All right, I like that, seeing you give Mike credit. I mean, get that appendix out on Wednesday, and boy, the energy he had, and he went racing down there one time to, like, challenge something. I mean, he was getting with it out there, and honestly, I think the appendix was weighing him down. He's really got his mojo back. And the only other thing, Stretch, we hadn't said anything negative about Bones in a long time. Lots of touchbacks, lots of great field goals, but gotta have that punt coverage. Gotta be ready for the fake. And the young man from Texas A&M, the punter, Braden Mann, threw a beautiful ball out there for a nice job by him. So that's the one little negative we have on the special teams, right?
I know what you're saying. Yeah, that it was a well-designed play. They caught the Cowboys in a certain look where they were, kind of playing soft versus that hold-up guy, and they were able to get that done. To me, you got to kind of give kudos to the Eagles staff because they did a good job of designing that. I'm not sure that I'm going to ding Bones now. Maybe he didn't have enough wristbands on tonight over there on the sideline to, make sure that he had everything buttoned up. But I thought overall, I mean, just a complete Cowboys win, a dominating win. And I'm going to be, I'm going to be excited to see how this team handles itself now that they're tied for first place. Because, I mean, you know, Buffalo is a very tough place to go. It doesn't look like the weather's going to be too stupid over there, but to be able to come off of this win and now go attack the Buffalo Bills, knowing that Philadelphia is going to fly home tonight. They'll probably get home at 4 or 5 in the morning. And then they've got the trip to Seattle to make next week, which Seattle's fighting for their playoff life. So I think this is a really tough situation where the Cowboys need to go to Buffalo now. And I mean, I'm almost like, golly, get this game graded, and you got to go right on to the next one. But now that you're tied for first place, you got to go see if you can put some distance between you and the Eagles.
All right, Stretch, appreciate your work. Always enjoy watching you on TV and then your work on the Doomsday Podcast. People want it. They wait for it. They ask for it. Stretch, do you still have your appendix at your age?
Yeah, Mosley, I do. It's kind of a personal question, but yeah, I got my appendix, and I, appreciate you. I appreciate you checking on that. And yeah, it operates and works pretty good. And I guess I didn't realize that you were so health conscious and so concerned about me. But you know, for a 60-year-old guy, I look all right for no one-eyed fat kid. I mean, I'm still in pretty good shape, and I appreciate that.
I had no clue you were 60. I had you still well in your 50s. Now, by the way, the appendectomy, I just looked it up. 12% of men have an appendectomy. 22% of females have appendectomies. I mean, just according to my research. Stretch, I really appreciate it.
I tell you, it's always nice to tune in to Doomsday and get a little of Mosley giving you the WebMD cliff notes. So, you know, I'm sure Sim Cox, he's back there probably, you know, he's trying to figure out what you're talking about too, Mosley.
I think he spent much of the last 5 to 10 years doing that. All right.
I hear you, but it's good to get on tonight, Mosley, and I'm glad that you're worried about glad you're concerned about my health during the holidays. It makes me feel a lot better.
Yeah, well, you look great, and that white shirt is starched and looks beautiful, and it popped there on WFAA. There he goes. It is Stretch Plays with Glenn Stretch Smith. And let me choose this time to tell you about a guy Stretch knows, Randy Hudson and Hudson Financial Group. It's unbelievable. The things that they do, it's car. It's you know, your home insurance, your car, not your auto and home. And then your any kind of liability these corporations use. Hudson Financial Group, and that's HudsonFinancialGroup.com. And HFG, and Stretch, you know this, out there in Heath. And Randy Hudson played for Corky Nelson and UNT back in the 1980s, had a great career there, and then he's just kind of kept on going with big-time business out there. And, boy, his clients, they're just protected. And then the life insurance aspect of it, all sorts of things that you might want to get involved in. And it's just really people turn to them for so many different areas. And I love the life insurance. They even work with schools and universities and like coaches to have their life insurance put into their contracts. It's a pretty amazing thing that they do. It is Randy Hudson. It is Hudson Financial Group. And Stretch, you've known Randy even longer than I have. What he does out there, it's pretty impressive, isn't it?
Yeah, great guy. He's very approachable. I mean, he's not one of these, you know, he's not really the typical insurance guy. I mean, he's got everything. He's got every available tool for you. I know, you know, a lot of times he handles big businesses, all of their corporate stuff. So, He really is. He's a good guy, and he's a good guy to get on the phone. And you know, he lives here in the Metroplex, and really he's a class individual. And we're glad to have him be a part of the Doomsday, man.
Okay, a team of licensed property, casualty, and financial consultants, founded in 1988. Look them up online. That's Hudson Financial Group. com. All right. Thank you, Stretch.
See you, buddy.
All right. There he was, Glenn Stretch Smith. Lots of A's all around and lots of good stuff for the appendectomy. And by the way, do you still have your appendix?
I do. Okay. Yes.
Okay.
Very fortunate in that regard.
Men have theirs taken out more than women generally, but then I read a stat that said, of appendectomies, 12% of men have them, 22% of women. So I don't know.
12% of men?
12% of all men have an appendectomy at some point, 22% of women.
I'll bet it becomes more popular among NFL coaches after seeing what Mike McCarthy did after his.
just to see how spry he was.
Yeah, how, you know, the wisdom he exerted and demonstrated through his game plan, his team winning handily against a team with the best record in the NFL. And, oh, by the way, as we talk about the value of this win for the Cowboys and put it all into some kind of context, you know, there are four teams in the NFL that have the best record in the league at 10-3. The 49ers, the Cowboys, the Eagles, and the Ravens. The Dolphins win tomorrow night. They can join.
Yeah.
They can join that. But it's only the third time since the merger in 1970 there are this many teams tied for the NFL's best record through week 14. But putting it in context in terms of the Cowboys and how dominant they've been at home. And I guess one thing is they basically switched places with the Eagles at least temporarily in the NFC playoff standings. They're now second to the 49ers, and the Eagles have fallen to fifth, which is the place Dallas has occupied most of the time. And we know the fifth place team gets to go play the NFC South winner in all likelihood, like Cowboys did last year.
Yeah.
On the road. The Cowboys, for obvious reasons, want as many home games as they can get. They've won 15 consecutive games here. Not only that, listen to this. The Cowboys have scored 30 points in 8 straight home games. That's the longest such streak in NFL history. The only two teams with longer streaks, Peyton Manning's Denver Broncos and Kurt Warner's Greatest Show on Turf.
Wow.
The 2012-2013 Broncos and the 1999-2000 Rams both won 11 straight or had 11 straight games at home where they scored 30 or more points. But Dallas is the only team in the Super Bowl era, which dates back to 1966, for those who need to know, to have 30-plus points in each of their first 7 home games of the season. They passed tonight the Bucs and the Patriots. They're the fourth team in the Super Bowl era. Listen to this. Fourth team in the Super Bowl era with at least 8 games won by 20 points in a season. Each of the previous 3 teams made the Super Bowl, and 2 of them won it. The only one that lost after winning at least 8 games by 20 points in a season were the 2007 Patriots, who entered the Super Bowl 18-0. How about that? That's what the Cowboys have done at home. That's why they need postseason games at home.
Yeah, yeah.
But the 49ers obviously have the tiebreaker over them. And even though right now, technically, the Cowboys – lead the Eagles because they have a tiebreaker. They have the better conference record. I think they're 4-1. Eagles are 3-1. But if they win out, the Eagles are going to have going to have a better conference record than the Cowboys because they lost at Arizona.
Ugh.
They lost to Arizona and Philadelphia. So that Arizona loss in week 3 could still come back and hurt them in terms of playoff seeding and opportunity.
Wow, that does put it in perspective. And tonight, in talking to Jerry, Jerry did say that he thinks this team's comparable and maybe even has a better shot than that 2007 team that lost to the Giants.
That was a number one seed.
Yeah.
That was the first number one seed under that playoff format that had ever lost in the first round. And they'd beaten the Giants twice that year.
Yes. And we were here and watched what the Giants did. And I may have, as Jerry was talking, whispered a Cancun joke. But he also said that
I thought they went to Cabo.
He would, was it Cabo? Yeah, whatever. Some one of those places. I think it might have been Cabo.
I'm not good on the gentle correction.
I like that. Tony's always taking the brunt, but Witten and Bobby Carpenter were both there. It's like didn't stick with either one of those guys.
In Las Vegas.
but Romo had to wear that one. But he also said that the Dak not getting to the Super Bowl would be every bit as disappointing as Tony. He thought that was it kills him. That he couldn't get Tony, a Super Bowl.
He's always said his greatest failing in his own mind is he never got Romo to a Super Bowl. And now he feels the same way about Dak.
Yeah. But he thinks Dak has everything you could possibly need to get it done. And Dak, and I think that's a good thing, by the way, what you said earlier, I'll circle back to it. You didn't think he totally looked like himself tonight. And I think he even alluded to that in his post game, kind of like almost we could have had more points if I'd have played better or not made that turnover.
You know what he said? He said, if I'd have played to my standard, we'd have put 50 on the board. Yeah.
Yeah. And maybe that's true, or maybe that's just, you know, hyperbole, but he's playing at such a high rate that honestly, the numbers look fine. He was 24 for 37 and threw for plenty of yards and a couple of touchdowns, at least played fine, had the one big fumble, but MVP chance have been raining down. That was another thing Jerry got into. Jerry thinks he should be right in the middle of that. Who is the
– Jerry's got to negotiate a contract extension with Dak after all this.
Oh, yeah. And, by the way, Micah, CD, I mean, there's a lot.
I mean, you better make your run right now because who knows what happens.
Exactly. Because that's a lot of people that are going to be lined up ready for enormous contracts. Correct. And you can't just beat the Dodgers and just go – hey, you pay $700 million. We'll defer a little bit of this to Shohei Ohtani. But oh, to your point about, yeah, I just think Dak, I mean, who is the – in the NBA, for instance, people are obsessed about the MVP. Quite honestly, I don't think it's a bad thing. People are not quite as obsessed in the NFL as they are in the NBA. But MVP race right now, NFL – and you obviously look around at everything else going on, and the odds are starting to come in and all that. But who would Dak? I mean, it seems like Mahomes is always going to be in the race. But
you know, I don't think Mahomes is going to be a factor this year. I think the Chiefs have lost too many games, and their offense just isn't as explosive as it typically has been. I don't think Mahomes is going to be there at the end. I think Brock Purdy, the 49ers.
Okay.
Quarterback is probably a front runner right now. Only five quarterbacks have won the MVP without leading the league in wins, touchdown passes, or passing yards. And Purdy was obviously the last player drafted in 2022. I think Hurts is still a candidate, depending on how they finish the next 4 weeks. I think Tua Tagovailoa, the Dolphins quarterback, is in there. Could a non-quarterback like Christian McCaffrey, the only 1,000-yard rusher coming into this week. Could Tyreek Hill become part of that equation if he breaks Calvin Johnson's single-season record and becomes the only receiver with a 2,000 yards in a single year? I think those are probably the top competitors for with Dak to be the MVP.
Yeah. It's sort of amazing thinking about, like, you know, last season and then even – at times early this season, but Dak is in the best stretch of his career. And I think everybody agrees with that. Even the national media, who's always been quick to knock Dak, I think everybody's kind of come around to it now. And I think what I didn't realize is, I mean, we usually have the usual suspects for like the most inane, nuttiest, you know, kind of almost borderline dumbest opinions. Who knew that this week it would be David Carr? I mean, he just seems like kind of a fairly, you know, like kind of benign personality. Like I was like, oh, David Carr's still doing TV.
Right.
And yet
he holds the NFL record for being sacked most often in the season in his failed career with the Texans.
Correct. And then he decides to say that
Marcus Mariota should be the starting quarterback for the Eagles.
Yeah.
And he probably thinks tonight vindicated that opinion.
I was trying to work out a joke because Mariota came at the end, and I thought I could get a good David Carr joke out of it. David Carr, he's right. He's right. He's come out right. All right, Ed, as we sign off, we do this after the game. Ed's already done an ESPN report post-game, ESPN interviews, 1:10 a.m. We're wrapping this up. Ed, any final thoughts?
Well, I mean, just looking ahead, the Cowboys have lost – all three of their losses this year have come on the road. They play their next two games on the road at Buffalo. I'll be at that game on Sunday. Weather supposed to be like mid to high 30s, 50% chance of rain, so not the worst in the world. Josh Allen leads the NFL in turnovers, so the defense might be able to exploit that flaw with Buffalo, but then they go play the Dolphins. We know what the Dolphins are capable of. They're the fastest team in football. So a couple of interesting games coming up, and where the Cowboys can continue to prove their legitimacy and earn the respect of the people who are skeptical about them, because they've now, they beat Seattle, and Seattle at the time had a 6-5 record, and they beat the Eagles, who were 10-2, had the best record in the NFL when they came in here. So they, you can't say their victories amount to nothing anymore, because you're questioning the caliber of the opponent. But now you can say, well, this is a team that can't go on the road and win. And so that's the challenge for them now, I think.
Yeah, they do. And they have the Eagles, as you pointed out earlier, 27th, toughest schedule. Cowboys have a really tough schedule.
I think the third hardest schedule the Cowboys have among,
wonder what the Niners
among
have.
Teams currently in the playoffs. Well, the 49ers just went through playing Seattle twice.
Yeah.
Playing the Cowboys earlier in the year, playing the Eagles. So I don't think I don't know what the 49ers schedule is, but I don't think it's as arduous as the Cowboys schedule.
They have those, and then the Lions come in here. One home game. I mean, now hopefully there's a playoff game, but we may only have one chance to be in this beautiful suite. Thanks to the Nation family. They had a big wedding this weekend. One of their granddaughter got married, and so that was kind of a neat deal. And I came up here and celebrated with them tonight.
Nice to stop in.
Yeah, and then and they're going on their honeymoon to Hawaii. So Alec and Caroline, let's just wish them, congratulations and best wishes in their marriage. Yeah. Let's make it last. Yeah. Lanai or something like
Mahalo.
That. Lahaina.
Lahaina.
Yeah, something.
That's where the fire was. Mountain.
Yeah, but they're going to be they're going to be near that.
Kapalua. There's plenty of places.
Yeah, they're going to. Yeah, there's a place. They're going to go to a place that's still there. Okay, appreciate you and great work, and thanks to Stephen Simcox for staying up late with us. Always,
you are still there, right, Stephen? You are still up.
We're hoping we got
probably waking his kids up.
Some of that. Oh, he's at the Palatial Studios of ESPN. Central Texas.
I know we haven't heard from him in a while. He might have gone.
No, he mutes himself, but we would love to hear from him at some point. Okay. God, gorgeous tree. Look at that over there.
You love that Christmas tree.
I just think it's beautiful. That's Jean. Other than that's better than all the art that she has up in here. Okay. Everybody have a tremendous night. Happy holidays. And we will talk to you after the Buffalo game next Sunday. Good night, everybody, from AT&T Stadium in Arlington, Texas.
Hey, it's Mark Goodman.
And I'm Alan Light.
On today's podcast, Record Store Day founder Carrie Colleton is joining us to discuss the April 20th RSD special releases.
Plus, we'll talk live with our audience, the Sound Up Pod Squad, and find out who still listens to vinyl. And some updates from the Beatles universe.
Oh, good. Sound Up with Mark Goodman and Alan Light, the only music podcast that matters. Get it on Pandora, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.